Whoa, big finish there from the Big Band Music Show. This is WHFR Dearborn, live from Henry Ford Community College. It is our public affairs show. Yes, we have our affairs in public here, just so you know. It's called the new WHFR Journal, local news and views, and it's coming up right after our theme music. Gotta have theme music. Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is September the 12th, 2008, and we are here with you for the next hour talking about local news and views and some topics that may be national or international but also really impact on us locally. I am going to start quickly with some of the local news and go through the local papers, especially the Dearborn Times-Herald twice a week, Sunday and Wednesday, and the Dearborn Press and Guide twice a week, Sunday and Wednesday. There's competition for you. Nobody can scoop the other one because they both come out on the same day, although sometimes they don't get the stories at the same time. So I guess that counts as a scoop. And we encourage all of our listeners, of course, to read the papers. Read as much as you can, in fact, news magazines, even every now and then, maybe a nonfiction book on a current social issue that will give you really some in-depth knowledge in order to make your decisions about, well, maybe who you're going to vote for in November, too, about some issues that people are supporting. My favorite comedian, who I can't play on this show or on the station because his language is not appropriate, is Lewis Black. And you may be familiar with Lewis Black. It's L-E-W-I-S from Comedy Central programs, stand-ups, and sometimes he's on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and he hosts some other shows too. But he now has a sort of a catchphrase, at least for one of his monologues, and that is, "I can't sing, I can't dance, but boy, can I read." And that's to his credit. That's an intelligent person, someone who really wants to find out all the facts and details that they can't just get from radio and TV. And so whatever we mention, just know it's not the whole story. And you may not even agree with some spin I put on it or some commentaries of mine. That's good. Go out and read. Read it for yourself. And I always recommend that people actually subscribe to the Dearborn Times-Herald, the Dearborn Press and Guide. If you live in Dearborn, if you live just outside Dearborn, you have your own either versions of these papers or actually other newspapers that are done on a weekly basis that really get into the details on what's happening locally. Oh, so, so very important. Well, looking at the Sunday Times from last Sunday, that is the Sunday Times-Herald, and let's see if there's something in there I wanted to talk about. We were talking a couple of weeks ago about the water systems in the local suburban area here, and some of them are considering setting up their own system instead of getting water and paying for the increasing cost of water from Detroit. Now, they're setting up their own sewage management system and water purification system, and they think that they could have cheaper costs for their communities. And I don't remember which communities those were. It was not Dearborn, I know that, which uses Detroit water. But water and electric rate increases will go into effect October 1st for Wyandotte. And they do it for themselves. And just to let you know, the costs are going up everywhere. Resolutions authorizing the increases were passed by the Municipal Service Commission and approved by the Wyandotte City Council last month. Melanie McCoy, general manager of the Department of Municipal Services, told the council that current economic conditions have led to the need for increased prices. Yep, increased prices. And that's You say, well, that's the way it goes. But listen to the details here, folks. You'd have some choices. If you were in control of your own water system, your own city, you could lobby, vote to actually save some money here. Listen, Mayor James DeSana of Wyandotte made a point of saying that the biggest cost is not labor, but commodities. Most people think costs go up because of increased labor costs, he said, but that's not the case in this instance. McCoy said that in the last year, the cost of chlorine, that's the number one purifier, sanitizer, whatever, that is added to water, of course, to kill bacteria, germ, whatever nasty things are in there. Fluoride, so that cost has gone up, okay, 43%, I assume it's in the last year. Fluoride, which supposedly strengthens the enamel and gives you fewer cavities on your teeth, especially if you're young, has gone up 90%. And alum, I don't know what alum does, folks, but something theoretically good anyway, has gone up 50%. All three chemicals are considered commodities. They're essential. And their costs have gone up, as part of the water cost and increases. Many communities, McCoy said, this is Melanie McCoy, head of the Department of Municipal Services, the water department, including water and sewage, I guess, in Wyandotte, said that many communities have considered not using fluoride anymore because it's so expensive. But we believe it is important, she said, especially for children. And she said the cost of water now is $1 per 1,000 gallons. Wouldn't you like to be able to buy it at the store that way? Imagine $1 and 1 penny per 1,000 gallons. What would you pay for a gallon of water in the grocery store? Which is, you say, well, that's purified or that comes from Fiji or something. Basically, you know, the water in the stores is not necessarily and usually not any better in terms of cleaner or more pure than what you get from your tap water. Now, it depends on your community and maybe the time of year, but it has been proven that tap water is pretty safe. Oh, some homes, some very much older homes that still have lead pipes may have a lead problem, but that's not the fault of the water company, that the water coming down the line is bad, just that your very old water pipes that are still made of lead, that they are, what is the word, leaching? They're putting some of that lead into the water you drink, and that can be very hazardous to your health and the health of your children. That's a whole separate issue. Anyway, the new water price, oh my gosh, will be $1.07 per 1,000 gallons. That's 1,000 gallons of water. Wow. So that's really good price, isn't it? Yeah. And even that extra 6 cents. Gee, give us a break per 1,000 gallons. The Wyandotte Municipal Water Treatment Plant has been trying to keep costs down, but there are expenses like a backwash water line that now must be installed. The line will transfer water that used to run off into the Detroit River to the Wayne County Wastewater Plant to be processed. So Wayne County runs a wastewater plant, huh? It'll cost $500,000 to install that line, and it will run from Van Alstyne to Oak Street. I don't know how long that is, but $500,000 to put that line in there. They said, we tried to fight it as long as we could, but now with new regulations, it has to be put in. Residents also face electricity rate increases averaging 7%. And so, again, 1,000 kilowatt hours. That's 1,000 watts per hour. It's going to be... there'll be $4.66 increase, and okay. Anyway, the monthly increase for 1,000 kilowatt hours will be $9.06. So not too bad per month, probably unless you're using a lot of electricity or you have to heat your house that way. Some people actually have electrical wires that glow in the dark. I mean, actually warm the house just by, I think it's called radiant heating. That's not too many like that, but that would be a problem. And interesting issue, though, and it's not going to affect it more than a few cents, is that fluoride is very, very controversial still. Ever since the 1950, there's quite a few studies, maybe it's not the majority opinion right now, that fluoride in the water supplies is not the way to get the fluoride on your kids' teeth. The safest way to do it, okay, it costs a little money, maybe $10 each visit to the dentist twice a year, but the dentist can put more heavy-duty fluoride directly on the teeth and let it harden you know, there, and it won't get into their system that way. Won't get into their bloodstream, their tissues, and so on. And I don't know specifically what the health hazards are, but it's now a large minority opinion in the health community, or at least in the alternative health providing community, that fluoride should have never been put in water. I know there's a few people that said that back in 1950 before it even happened, but even now 50 plus years later, there's evidence that maybe we shouldn't have our fluoride given to everybody, especially including kids, in the water. So it goes in their body first and only indirectly gets to their teeth. But that would only save a few cents. But see, if you're in control of your own system, locally, your group can make those decisions. What really is tough is when you have a large cost that you get hit with, like this $500,000 for this transfer water line that Wyandotte has to put in. That's a big hit. Of course, they can probably split that up over several years, get a bond issue or something. And it's a very interesting article, and it's in the Sunday Times, September 7th, about Wyandotte's situation. Something to think about. You know, Mayor Guido of Dearborn, before he passed away, he thought we should produce, get this, our own electricity using turbine generators. And I'm not sure what would power them, whether it was gasoline or natural gas or just electricity. But the latest model of these things are very, very efficient, much more efficient than electrical power generators at DTE Energy, which are coal-fired, not good for the environment. But I suspect that the cost of energy, the cost of gasoline, oil, electricity, whatever, might make the size of turbine generators that Dearborn might set up. And, of course, there'd be transmission lines, too. And so the upfront cost may be too much to consider right now. But he said we should do that. That was somewhere in his last term of office before he unfortunately passed away. And I haven't heard it brought up again, probably because the cost of running those generators, that energy cost now, is so much higher that it wouldn't necessarily save us any money. But Wyandotte is already into that, and good for them, I think. And I think it'll help them in the future, too, to have their own local supplies and control. And as much as possible, that's what I recommend. Get off the grid. Don't count on the government to do it big time. Money is better spent locally. Less waste, more accountability. I mean, that's just true. And yet, I really believe, Cornick, that you might say you're a contradiction in terms. My opinion is that there are some programs, such as, yes, public education, that really will rankle some of my libertarian friends, that if done right and regulated right, it has to be at the federal level. I've spoken positively about single-payer health care, universal health care, but not letting it be done the way that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are proposing right now, or Clinton did propose before. And, of course, John McCain doesn't want to see it happen really at all, except through private insurance and, whatever that means. It won't happen, won't be cheap. Our health system needs help. And so there are some very specific programs that, if well-regulated, managed, and all very out in the open, I think have to be done at our national government level. But not a lot of other things, like energy. Yep. Okay, that was the story from last Sunday's Times Herald. Moving on, in the new WHFR Journal, we do have to say, now that I had a big-time opinion of my own, that the opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone else here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, or students. Keep that in mind. Okay, and remember, you're not supposed to believe anything I say as being totally true until you check it out in other sources that you read. Don't just ask people to blab at you. Call somebody, hey, Margaret, Martha, Fred, what do you think? Well, I think, are these people experts? Are these people in the field, so to speak? Have they spent their lives learning the details? It's great to share opinions among your friends, but if they're not experts, they don't have the background, okay? I don't think you can be friendly, but I don't think you should change your opinion just because your friend has an opinion that they express forcibly, okay? You need to check out things by reading about them. Okay. Okay, Sunday Press and Guide brings up the fact that, and I think I knew this last week, maybe not, Dearborn City Council has blocked the sale of the land in West Dearborn between the two parking towers, has stopped that land sale, which was going to give a proposed hotel. Now, this is very confusing to me. I'm just going to summarize this, and I agree the council voted unanimously to reject this. Okay. First of all, the original plan of Burton Katzman was that they were supposed to build more townhouse, condo, whatever, around those towers, which would have made the towers the place that people would park their cars. Ha-ha, maybe for a small fee. And that would have made the towers very self-sustaining and pay off some of the cost of putting them up. But the developer wanted to put a Hampton Inn between the towers. Now, I don't know if this person is the same person that owns the Hampton Inn on Michigan Avenue. You know, it's in that green space or whatever, just south of Evergreen Road, curves down and hits Michigan Avenue there in between East and West Dearborn. And there's a Hampton Inn. Okay. It seems to be doing good enough business. So I don't know if, but it says in the paper here is that that Hampton Inn would be closed, shuttered. Well, what's going to happen there? Is somebody else going to make a hotel, a motel out of it? And the Hampton franchise would go down between these twin towers in West Dearborn. Gee. Now, it's true that if it's in West Dearborn, people might want to stay in the Hampton because then they can walk from the Hampton to a wider variety of shops and stores and restaurants. Okay, if it's right there in the middle, you can't do very much unless you get in your car. There's no walkways, sidewalks, shuttles that'll take you to Fairlane Town Center or even Greenfield Village. In fact, I thought they were going to put some sort of pass-through there so that people could enter Greenfield Village across the railroad track there at the Hampton, but that didn't happen. So anyway, they said no to this. It's just not right, and I think it would look terrible, first of all. And then they'd have no land for the farmer's market. Then they wouldn't have any land in West Dearborn for these other special events like Fall into Dearborn coming up October 3rd through 5th. All kinds of activities, and it's going to be centered mostly on that land, on that space between the two towers. I really think you need that kind of open space in a thriving retail area to do these special events, to set up the shops and the booths and the... You know, not just solid stores one after the other, you know, let people be outside and socialize and bring in musical artists and, you know, artists with their painting and their sculpture and carving and all that. So I'm glad the council did this, but there's really some problems working with these developers. And I just can't understand this business person who I have to assume owns the Hampton Inn franchise in the middle of Michigan Avenue between East and West Dearborn there, and maybe his business is just not quite as he's not making the profit he wants to. Maybe he's losing money. Okay, but for Dearborn to have a facility that's not there at all, and we got to fill that one, I mean, do you really help your problem? Just like the new medical center, if that ever happens, at the Montgomery Ward site. I mean, Montgomery Ward building is being torn down very slowly, I think. Boy, they really built those buildings well, didn't they? Wrecking balls there for a couple of weeks now, and it's still not down. At least as of a couple of days ago, it wasn't down as I drove by. Too bad we can't make things like that anymore. But for that, they're going to move some Midwest Medical Center that's further up Schaefer down, and that's going to be totally vacant. I don't really see that as a big help, you know, closing down and making vacant something so they can just move to a better location. I mean, it's nice for them, I guess, if they can do it. And I think it would look bad. It would have been stupid for the Hampton Inn to be in between those two. And then we would have lost that sort of open area to do special events and special promotions for West Dearborn. So I'm glad the council did that anyway. And they were unanimous, so it wasn't like there was another opinion there. It's not even a thought that was the wrong thing to do, I guess. Although, aren't there more on the council than six? So somebody wasn't there. Okay. Of course, Dillon, Secretary of State, is appealing the recall ruling. As we said, they might. There was a ruling that the recall had to go ahead, and now they're appealing it. So I don't know if it's going to be on the ballot in November or not. Even if it did get on the ballot and you voted to repeal Representative Andy Dillon, Michigan House Majority Leader for the Democrats. He'd only be gone for 2 months, and then probably in that same election, he's going to get elected for a new term, which starts in January. So it'd be a little slap on the hand, 2 months vacation over Christmas break, and that's it. But I guess it would still have some meaning if it was there. Details about that fall into Dearborn are starting to creep into the paper, and last Sunday's Press and Guide had one of the first stories, I think, on it. Although, some confusing details. At the end of Art on the Avenue, which is going to be just Saturday and Sunday, so they're going to have some artists there, popular entertainers will be on stage noon to 4 p.m. October 4th. Well, at the end of it, Art on the Avenue goes 2 days, as it says in the paragraph right above it. So at the end of the day on the first day, is that what they mean? Or at the end of the whole Art on the Avenue, then it won't be October 4th, it'll be October 5th. Oh, well. We got plenty of time to work that out, but it's something to go out there and see what's happening for October 3rd through 5th in West Dearborn. Yep. Okay, that does it for that edition. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. The new WHFR Journal with myself, Jay Koronek, here today. Just want to remind you, you don't get local news like this and commentary anywhere else on your radio dial. And, of course, if you're not listening to your radio right now, it's because you're listening to our podcast from our website, WHFR.FM. Yes, you can listen live to the show from 1 to 2 through our website, WHFR.FM. And if it's after 2 p.m. on Friday, automatically that file is available to download or listen live to on your computer. Maybe you're in Starbucks and Wi-Fi area, whatever. WHFR.FM, that is our website. Yes, it is. Okay, why did I save that edition? I don't know. Okay. Press and Guide from Wednesday, September 10th, just 2 days ago. Cuts at Dearborn Public Schools. Now, the state didn't come through with the amount of money per pupil increase that this district expected. They expected an allowance of budgeted for an increase of $108 per student, and what they got was $56 per pupil, almost 50% reduction from what they expected, and that will decrease, we look at all the students, $920,000 that the state of Michigan is going to be paying back to the Dearborn Public Schools. So almost $1 million not coming in. And so they have decided to do cuts, some across the board from general budgets and others for positions that I don't know the importance of. Like they're eliminating their print shop, which saves them $61,000. I guess they're going to send printing jobs out to other local print shops. I don't know. And there's some technicians and substitute bonus pay is being cut. A Terra Nova test. They're slashing those costs by 50. I don't know what Terra Nova is. Okay, so it's hard to tell here, but it looks like they haven't sacrificed core instruction, core education, and that's a good thing. So congratulations to the school district for at least keeping the teachers there. And in fact, and I think this is probably because of the state of Michigan's new requirements, tougher requirements for graduation, they've had to add three more math and three more literacy resource teachers at each of the three Dearborn high schools. So that's 9. No, 6 times 3 is 18. Let's get our math straight. I remember my math. I had a lot of math classes. Yeah, I had all the way through trigonometry. Yes, in high school. And it wasn't required. I don't know how far the graduation requirement is going now. Probably just for advanced. I think they're doing a little bit of geometry. I don't think they're getting into trigonometry. They say, what good is trigonometry? Well, you got to know trigonometry, you never get into calculus. Okay, and calculus, ooh, that's math that really is appropriate when you're trying to be an engineer or a scientist and you're trying to figure out how the world does things. I never took calc. I always wanted to, but of course it wasn't in my high school. It's a college-type class. Anyway, tough choices, but I think they probably did their best there. Now, I misunderstood, and I had my Dearborn Schools advisor, our big band DJ Bill, give me his insight since he works for Dearborn Public Schools, that the story facing it here about Edsel High School's athletic complex received facelifts. They don't talk on the front page about the cost, and you can say, whoa, they put in, you know, artificial turf, and they put in, oh, that cost a fortune. Remember, folks, you voted a millage for that a couple years ago. And so all of these athletic field improvements, and Bill was mentioning there is now a walking path around the field around at Dearborn High, which means the residents in the community that instead of walking on sidewalks, they want to walk around in long ovals instead at the high school, they can use that too. But that's already been paid for, folks. So don't think that, oh, why don't they just, not have the what's wrong with real grass instead of the artificial turf? Well, you paid for it. You said you wanted it. At least those people that voted that way did. And so that's not something that to worry about cutting, because that those improvements at least are still paid for out of that special millage issue. Good to remember, okay. Here's a Romulus story. I know you love these things. State revokes operating license of waste wells. Waste wells. The state moved one step closer, according to the story, again from September 10th, to shutting down two deep injection hazardous waste wells. Dig these big holes in the ground. They put really dangerous, poisonous, toxic stuff. I know I'm being redundant, but I'm saying terrible stuff down in these well sites. And hopefully they don't spread and contaminate anything else or come back to the surface. But they're going to take away the license for the wells on Citron Drive, which is in Romulus near Taylor City limits. That's because the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Region 5, terminated the underground injection control permits it issued for the wells last year after finding leaks and other violations. Okay. Now, the Detroit Police and Fire Pension System, which has been the primary funding source for the wells, oh my gosh, they put all their money into these wells so that the cost of operating them would guarantee them, you know, money on their retirements in the future. Has fought to keep the wells operating, whether they're leaking or not, and has lined up a new firm to operate the wells. Ron King, an attorney representing the Detroit Police and Fire Pension System, could not be reached for comment. Dear, dear, dear. So that's an unfortunate thing, as they invested all their money or a lot of their money for their pension funds in wells that now may be just put out of service. I'm sure, unless they can find a way to patch the leaks or something, if they can't get those operating and therefore making money, they won't have much hope for their retirements. And, of course, police and fire people, wherever, Dearborn, Detroit, whatever, they work hard. They deserve some money to retire on. And, you know, Social Security's not enough, folks. I've already been there, looked at that, know about it. Social Security is not something to think you can live on in your retirement age. Go to Social Security website and check that out, even if you're young. You got to have savings. You got to. For me, the little Social Security amount at age 62 here is only about a fourth of what I need to basically live on. And I'd like to do more than just basically live. You know, I mean, I'd like to have, maybe a trip once a year somewhere outside of Dearborn. I know Dearborn has everything, but you know what I'm saying is, so don't anybody think Social Security, oh, well, that's a guaranteed retirement fund. And then even the money in that fund is up for maybe going broke. Was it 2017? Somewhere there. Only about 10 years away. So what's going to happen to all of us retirees? That's only 25% of what I need. So who cares? I mean, poverty level one way, poverty level another, No, I'm not living in poverty now thanks to my school teacher's pension fund. Just like police and fire department pensions. Those are not just supplements of a couple bucks. Usually, they're the main amount of money you need to retire on. So it's special savings that your employer have set up, either 401k or 403b or whatever it is, or a pension fund like General Motors, auto worker pensions funds. Those are the majority way that people are staying alive in their retirement if they can't work anymore or choose not to. Okay, they're That's the supplement there, so just to keep that clear. Okay. Dearborn Times Herald from Wednesday. Let's see. I covered two stories the same there. Oh, go back to the press and guide just briefly here. Okay. This is the only local news show on the radio where you can hear the pages turning on the air. Did you know that? That's true. Yeah. WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM. We're making waves. Okay. Things are happening so fast. Frank Bewick, his 30+1 column from Wednesday, talks about Sarah Palin as the choice for vice president with John McCain. Of course, that's still a big topic in the news, but it keeps changing every day. So many little innuendos back and forth and misunderstandings. And, oh, they got to talk about something on those 24-hour news stations. Really? Really? They got to make mountains out of molehills. I mean, they have to. Otherwise, they have nothing to talk about. Think about that. What else could they talk about? Well, they could talk about real serious issues. You know, a lot of issues that are much more serious than lipstick or something else, but no, they don't. And I'm not saying it's a criticism of liberal media, because I know, as a media teacher, most of the media are not liberal. And they're not all that conservative either, by the way. Most of the media have a rich person's bias. Yeah, did anybody ever tell you that? Yeah, it's rich media, poor democracy. Okay, rich media bias. And one of the things is that they'll go for sensationalistic topics on the news. Things like lipstick references and that. That in sum, and looking at it in detail, has no valuable meaning for anybody at all. Gossip, scandal, gossip, scandal. Not getting down to the hard facts at all of anything to solve anybody's problems. You say, well, news is just entertainment anyway. Oh, yeah? I thought news was supposed to be educational, supposed to give you ideas about better way to live your life, better way to live your life, and better politicians to elect, too, when election time comes. But no, no, no. If it's rich media, they want to keep your attention. And if they run out of, homeless people, the problem with homeless people, that's so boring. Nobody wants to hear about it. And except maybe the homeless, but they can't afford to have televisions or cable TV. So we'll just put on some fluff gossip and extend the story for 10 weeks or 12 weeks or something. Because it's on TV, it must be important, right? Most people say, well, if it's not important, it wouldn't be on TV. Oh, that's wrong. But if they can keep you watching, then they make more money on commercials and they make more profits for their rich corporate business owners. So be very suspicious of these stories, and it is my point of view, and I've expressed it in detail to my students over the years, that it's not so much a liberal bias, because there's not that many liberal media. If you actually look at who the media are and you analyze things, and liberal, there's more conservative spokespersons and commentators and entire networks like Fox News Channel than anything else. And there's another spin on it, too. I mean, Glenn Beck, you might say, is conservative. He's more a libertarian, okay? Very interesting that that should not be thought of as conservative or liberal. It's really, I won't say the best of both, but it's really equal parts of some liberal beliefs, but also some conservative beliefs. So you can't say Glenn Beck is coming from that point of view. And then there's inconsistencies. Bill O'Reilly has been called a conservative, but he's all over the place on different issues. And I think that's true, is that you can't just take doctrines in general that don't apply anymore either, like what liberals used to be 40, 50 years ago and what conservatives used to be, not because the Democratic and Republican parties aren't that way anymore. They really don't have dime's worth of difference between them, and many people have said that. I'd like to shift now to, I do want to mention that Tim Skupik's view, which is in the Press and Guide this Wednesday, last Wednesday, the 10th, view from Lansing, he says, put real change into presidential campaigns. And he doesn't feel that that's been done, that they're not talking about real issues. His suggestion is to help us decide who's the better candidate for president. And, of course, there really are more than two people running. I'll talk about that in a second for president. But challenge these presidential candidates to now not just announce their vice presidential choices, but also who they're going to appoint, who they're really going to appoint to their cabinet posts. Who's going to be in charge of the military? If we really knew a lot about Donald Rumsfeld, would we have voted for George W. Bush in 2000, if you did? You know, you get my point here? I mean, even John McCain said Rumsfeld did one of the worst jobs ever in trying to supervise this war in Iraq. Since they didn't start it, it's hard to figure out what that actually was. But in any event, very good idea. Good suggestion from Tim Skupik, and he explains himself, and you should read that if you can in Wednesday's Press and Guide. It would give people an objective, logical way to see the quality of their advisors, and that must have something to do with the quality of their own choices as future presidents. But nobody's ever done that, I don't think, so that's probably not going to happen. Okay, what I have here is an excerpt from VoteNader.org. That's right, Ralph Nader is running for president, is a vice presidential candidate. It's Matt Gonzalez, former candidate for mayor of San Francisco, who seems to be a real nice person. Saw him on cable, saw him on the internet. Internet video, because of course the major media doesn't do. Ralph Nader, Matt Gonzalez are going to be on the ballot in 45 of our 50 states in November, including Michigan. 45 out of 50 states. They have no money hardly to spend, whereas Barack got something like $278 million during his primary campaign, although I understand he's running a little short of money now in this big campaign here. TV time costs money, but Ralph Nader is now polling 6%. That's a CNN poll. I have it right here. It's from yesterday. It was done on the state of Michigan, who's going to vote for whom. And he is from, Ralph Nader, by the way, is from Connecticut. But in the latest CNN poll, state by state, Ralph Nader, who appeared on CNN with host Wolf Blitzer on Wednesday afternoon, is at 6% in Michigan and 4% in New Hampshire, by the way. And, of course, he's clearly not expected to win the race, but some believe that he could be a spoiler this year. Shame on Capital Watch, which is the website that actually it's blogs.courant.com. Capital Watch is one of those blogs. That whole spoiler thing is totally bogus, totally wrong. What I'd like to do is feature a little bit of this hour-long press conference that was held on Wednesday, in which Ron Paul, that's right, Ron Paul, one of the Republican wannabes for presidential Republican Party presidential nomination, who was the third highest fundraiser, amazingly, in his primary campaign. Nobody expected that. He got a lot of votes across the country. And now he started his own, he's written a book called Revolution, a Manifesto, which is not a violent revolution. He wants to make some systematic changes to our American system. Like a few that he's been talking about for years would have probably prevented the mortgage crisis and the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mae crisis and the Bear Stearns and now the Lehman stock exchange crisis. But nobody cared. Nobody listened to him. He really knows economics, folks. Okay, I know his, by profession, is Dr. Ron Paul. He delivers babies or delivered babies for many, many years, thousands of babies. But he also was in the Army, Medical Corps, and, you know, a big, important group. But boy, does he know economics. I read the book Revolution, and it's concise, it's short, and it's not heavy duty, you know, economics or accounting or something. But it is very clear, and I think we should try some of these things. But in any event, Nader and Ron Paul had this press conference, and I'd like to feature just a few minutes to show you the atmosphere and the excitement of the conference. I maybe have to fast forward. I do not have a segment queued up here, but I will summarize it for you after a few minutes of this introduction. So here's the press conference of Ron Paul and Ralph Nader, and they had something extraordinary to say that they agreed on. So you'd say, well, Ron Paul, he's conservative, libertarian, what have you, Republican. And Ralph Nader, independent third party. Some people would see him as a progressive liberal. But in fact, I don't think that's fair either. He's an independent. He truly is. And boy, is he smart. I'll get back to that. So here's a little bit of the startling press conference. And if it doesn't get to the punchline quickly, I'll come back and give it to you. So here's what it sounded like.
So much for coming out today. We've got four leaders here today of conscience and principle. The format will be Dr. Paul is going to speak for about 5 minutes and explain why we're here. Then each of our candidates will speak for a couple of minutes and share their remarks. And then finally, we will have time for questions at the end. Thank you very much. With no further ado, Dr. Ron Paul.
Thank you very much for coming. I consider this press conference very important. I'm very pleased that we have some special guests here. We have three of the candidates here with me, Cynthia McKinney, Chuck Baldwin, and Ralph Nader. And I understand Bob Barr is on his way, or will be here shortly. I want to start off by stating that we come together here in unity, in spite of the disagreements that some of the candidates have on some of the points. There's some points that bring them together. The process brings them together, as well as the principles that we find very, very important that we're following in this country. And we've drawn up a set of principles, and the four candidates have agreed to these principles. And I want to read those so that really gives you the thrust of what we're doing here today. But let me start by what these principles are. It says, we agree. Foreign policy. The Iraq war must end as quickly as possible with removal of all our troops from the region. We must initiate the return of our troops from around the world, including Korea, Japan, Europe, and the entire Middle East. Suggestion. This is not so much as a rally. I know you support some of these people, but we want to run it as a press conference. So sort of hold back a little bit on that, and then when the questions come, the questions will come from the press. We must cease the war propaganda, threats of a blockade, and plans for attack on Iran. Nor should we reignite the Cold War over Georgia. We must have a willingness to talk to all countries and offer friendship and trade and travel to all who are willing. We must take off the table the threat of a nuclear first strike against all nations. Privacy issue. We must insist on protecting the privacy and civil liberties of all persons under U.S. jurisdiction. We must repeal or radically change the Patriot Act, the Military Commissions Act, and the FISA legislation. We must reject the notion of torture, elimination of habeas corpus, secret tribunals, and secret prisons. We must insist on no immunity for corporations that spy willingly on the people for the benefit of the government. We must reject the unitary president, the illegal use of signing statements, and excessive use of executive orders. The national debt. We believe that there should be no increase in the national debt. The burden of debt placed on the next generation is unjust and already threatening our economy and the value of our dollar. We must pay our bills as we go along and not unfairly place this burden on a future generation. The Federal Reserve. We insist that there be a thorough investigation, evaluation, and audit of the Federal Reserve System and its cozy relationship with the banking corporate financial institution. The arbitrary power to create money and credit out of thin air behind closed doors for the benefit of special interests must be brought to an end. There should be no bailouts of corporations and their corporate subsidies. Corporations should be aggressively prosecuted for crimes and fraud. That is the basic statement that brings us together. Now, I would like to talk a little bit about the process. I've come to the conclusion, after having spent many years in politics, that presidential elections turn out to be more of a charade than anything else. And I think that is true today. It is a charade. And the endless discussion that goes on, this time longer than ever, for practically 2 years, and all the talk about, you know, things that aren't unimportant. They don't talk about the issues that we have just talked about here. And it seems to be like a collusion of ideas and two parties and the media. It just goes on, and you just think about all this talk on television, pretending there's this great difference. And really, when you look at it, there is no difference, because they don't address these subjects. We have other candidates that agree and disagree with the other two candidates. And the important thing here is, who's the majority? There is no doubt in my mind that the majority is on our side. We represent the majority of the American people. The majority of the American people, even the recent polling, shows that 60% of the American people are unhappy with their choices. If you take the total number of Americans and the percentage that register, then the percentage that vote, and then the percentage that vote for a candidate, you end up electing a president with 32% of the American people. And because they have been more or less conditioned to believe, well, the two candidates are different, and we have to vote for the lesser of two evils, they end up voting, half the people who vote for the president are voting for the lesser of two evils. And so therefore, 16% of the American people essentially are saying, hey, I like this candidate, and they vote for the president. You know, yesterday, I had a phone call, the first phone call that I personally received or had received from anybody in the McCain candidacy, in his campaign. They called, and it was a bit of a surprise to me, because their request was that I endorse John McCain today. And I said, well, I don't like the idea of getting about 2 or 3 million people angry at me. So they were serious, and it was a respectful call. And the argument was, he would do a little less harm than the other candidate. And, you know, we just don't need to do that anymore. You know, I believe it was 1988, and I believe Ralph Nader will remember this campaign, there was a debate going on with George Bush Sr. in Dukakis, and it was to be put on by the League of Women Voters. And there was a secret agreement between George Bush Sr. and Dukakis that they would dictate all the terms, that they would say who can come, who the moderator is, and all this, and who had to be excluded. And when they presented these details to League of Women Voters, they said, no way, they won't do it. And this was their statement. The demands of the two campaigns would perpetuate a fraud on the American voter.
Okay, so we're going to come back to live in the studio. I can see somebody was recording the audio for that on the top of their camcorder or from their cell phone, and we get the applause nice and loud, and we don't get the speakers all that loud. So apologize if you had some trouble hearing Ron Paul. That was Representative Ron Paul, a former Republican presidential hopeful, and is not currently, of course, doing anything other than running for his own district again in Texas, which is his home district, someplace in Texas. And the point of that whole thing is that because these four parties, and that's right, Ron Paul is there because he agrees with the four parties that were represented with their candidates. And one party was the Constitution Party. And I'm sorry I didn't write down the name of their candidate. I apologize to that person. He has every right as an American to be on the ballot in many states. And I think they will be on the ballot in Michigan. Cynthia McKinney, who is the Green Party USA candidate for president. And she was at this press conference. Bob Barr, they said, would be arriving shortly. Bob Barr is a Libertarian Party candidate for president, and he formerly was a Republican and was formerly in Congress as a Republican, and many, many, many years of experience and very knowledgeable on many things. He has had some problematic votes that didn't seem very libertarian, in fact, and such as on the war in Iraq, and he has now been reborn, he claims, and totally disagrees and says those votes were crazy, he was misled, and so on, and so he's libertarian. And then Ralph Nader. Now, Ralph Nader is on more ballots, more state ballots, than anyone other than the Democrats and Republicans, of course, who control the whole game. You know, the debate committee was set up by congressional Democrats and Republicans to favor Democrats and Republicans, to keep those other party candidates out because, well, they can't have anything good to say, can they? Not true. And for all those political science teachers out there who say you can't run a country with three, four parties, it just doesn't work, Canada does work. It's true they had a lot of special elections. Their prime minister says, well, I didn't get a majority of the parliament, our Congress in Canada, and can't get things passed that I agree with. So we're going to have another election. And by golly, you better elect more people from my party. That's what he's saying. And it's going to be sometime in December. So that's boggles the mind. There's no 18 months build-up analysis of anything. You just got to have another national election whenever the prime minister apparently wants to do it. I think there is at least every 5 years or 4 years or something they have to do it, but they can call a special election at any time. Wow. And they've had three, I think, in the last 4 years. So kind of crazy. But hey, they're doing okay as a country. I know Italy's had its problems with multiple parties, but they're surviving. France, Germany. So almost all the countries of the world, except for those dictatorships, those pseudo-democracies like Russia, and they're not even communists anymore, and that's not the issue. But of course, Saddam Hussein was always elected democratically by the people of Iraq by 100%. Yeah, 100%, or we'd chop your hands off. Those are exceptions. Those are not really democracies as I see it, and there's really only one party on the ballot anyway, and so you're in a lot of trouble if anybody finds out you didn't vote for who's in power now. But in any event, we have this totally false belief that a few political science teachers of mine tried to tell me in high school. Oh, the whole system in the U.S. would crash and burn. I think the system is in need of significant change, folks, and most of you agree. I mean systemic change. That means get to the core of it here. We need some new idea. We can't just do better at the directions we're already going. That's not going to cut it, folks. Not for the future. You know, America's debt, America's pollution, America's economic crisis. You can't just do better on what you already tried to do. It's not going to work. You're going to need to have some new ideas and go some new directions. And sometimes maybe they won't work out perfectly, and then you find another new direction. We haven't had any new directions for decades, folks, I don't think. And that's why America is in the decline it's in. You say, oh, America's not in decline. We're the best in the world. Well, in many ways, we still are, but yeah, we're not going to be there in a year or two. And there's plenty of crisis to go around here if you pay attention to the news or if you read a few books. So what are they suggesting? What's the core here? And you can get this clip, by the way, if you want to listen to the whole thing in spite of the fact the speakers aren't as loud as the applauders. This is the Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, and the other three political candidates that, the four major third parties, if you want to call them all third parties, of the United States of America. And they all said one thing together, along with Ron Paul: don't vote for a Democrat or Republican for president this November. Don't do it. You will not get systemic change. Wow. Can you imagine all those parties coming together? And especially because they've been frozen out, kicked out of any chance to get on the debates. And they don't have $270 million like Barack had during the primary. They don't have all the money from the National Election Campaign Fund, even though Barack said, I don't want that. McCain is accepting. the hundreds of millions of dollars from that fund for his ads on TV. So he said, well, I don't see any ads, so they can't have any good ideas. That's not true. Completely not true. Spread the word. Tell your friends. Okay? And besides, the ads tell you nothing. Don't listen to the ads. Don't pay attention to them. They don't give you enough information to make a judgment, a fair judgment in your own mind. No logical, objective person who actually uses their brain to think with would believe anything they hear for anybody, I don't care, even for Ralph Nader, in a 30-second TV spot. Okay? Read their books. Go to their websites. Read their position papers. And Jay Kornick said so. No, Ron Paul, Ralph Nader, Cynthia McKinney, Bob Barr, and the Constitution Party presidential candidate said the same thing. Find out about us. We have now been frozen out of many states because of unbelievably strict ballot access. You know, you need 10 million signatures in 3 days or you won't get on the ballot to be a presidential candidate. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but it's just crazy. Now, Nader is a great tactician, and he and his core of mostly unpaid intelligent people have been out there, and they got on 45 ballots out of 50. Unbelievable, considering how the system is trying to keep Ralph and everybody else out. And by the way, you don't have to be part of a political party to get on the ballot. No, that's not in the Constitution. You can run as an independent, as yourself, as a person. There's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to have a political party. So what good is a political party? Well, it's great for the political party. You have parties. You have people to invite to your party. No, you have organization, of course. And theoretically, candidates don't matter. It's the party platform. In fact, the party platforms, not a dime's worth of difference these days. Not really. Especially during the election campaign. Everybody's using the general statements and, oh, we don't want war unless we have to. We're going to solve the economic crisis, but we don't know how to pay for it. We're going to fix health care, but we're not sure how to do that. Both big parties are saying that. Well, but the four other parties have very specific ideas, three other major parties and Ralph Nader, about what to do. Specific ideas. They do. You might like them, you may not. Do you know what they are? Oh, I don't have time to go into it here. Sorry. Better do your research. In fact, I even want to give credit here, and it's only 2 minutes to go. I got to say goodbye. The Mackinac Center on Public Issues, which is a conservative think tank here in Michigan, and often their editorial statements are featured in the Dearborn Times Herald. And here's one I wish they would have put in the Times Herald. Maybe they just got it, too. I just got it in the mail. Maybe they will include it. I hope they do so you can read it. 8 ballot measures we would like to see. We would like to see. Joseph Lehman at the Mackinac Center. And again, I'm always suspicious of a think tank that at the outset said we're conservative and we're going to do research. And by golly, their research always supports their conservative ideas. Isn't that amazing? Well, that's bogus, of course. You always can find what you're looking for, even if it's not totally valid. Okay. But they want right-to-work laws ended. They want state spending limitations. They want universal education tax credit. They want compensation for regulatory takings of property. They want paycheck protection. Right-to-work limited to public school teachers. They want supermajority or voter approval of tax increases, and they want a part-time legislature. So these are all very specific things. Where do our candidates stand on any of these things? I'm not saying I agree with them. They're all sort of conservative, but they're specifics, you know, and they're new twists and turns on things that we're trying to do to improve things. Well, we've got to pay attention to the details. Finally, in my last 1 minute before Highway 61 starts cruising down the road here. I just got a copy of Michael Moore, and I know you love Michael Moore, of course, Bowling for Columbine, Fahrenheit 9/11. We all love him. He's a folk hero here in Michigan, or should be. And he's intelligent. Ever read any of his books? Amazing writer. Amazing writer. Great researcher. So you say, oh, I don't like his commentaries on Larry King. Yeah, did you see him last week? He was there in a bowling alley in Traverse City. He lives there now. I think. I think he moved from New York City. He's living outside of Traverse City. And anyway, I got his latest book. It's called Mike's Election Guide 2008. And he brings up a point here from page 14 and 15. Get the book or read it in your library. And he says, they say we Americans don't want to elect someone smarter than we are. They say we'd rather elect someone who is all silly looking, you know, has got a dumb look on their face, and is dumb, in fact. Why? So we can feel superior? So we can laugh at the idiot? Is that a nice thing to do? You know, present president aside, I'm sure he's not referring to our current president. But he says, is that a nice thing to do? Do you think it's fair to put so much responsibility in W's hands when he clearly wasn't able to touch his nose with his finger or count backwards from 10? That's a joke, folks, okay? But a slight exaggeration, some people might think. Anyway, looking back on it all now, I mean, he admits he doesn't like to read. He was only a C-plus student in college, and we know how he got through Yale, right? Yeah. Cheerleader. He said, but Michael Moore said, looking back on it now, it seems quite cruel of us, doesn't it? Okay, the point of electing someone more sober and brilliant than we are is to make sure the country moves forward under a president who seeks to create a better world. Open up new worlds with new ideas. Wow. So there is a criteria that I don't think many people are coming up with, and I think that should be true. Elect somebody smarter than yourself. It's not just college education, not just grades, but somebody that's well-read and wise on top of it. And sometimes applying their smarts over many years will let you know how wise they were. But hey...